murder by experts. Good evening, students of the mystic marvels of manifold murder. This is your host, extending a cordial invitation to step through the creaking door of the inner sanctum, where we probe deep into the dark and cavernous depths of men's souls to see what makes them kill. Our clinic here is the whole vast world of crime. And you who listen in may hear us dissect our characters at a safe distance. And unless your nerves are strong, you'd better take my advice and keep your distance.
Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous as ever, Information Please continues on its carefree path. And tonight, our experts are...
I'm Don Dupé.
I'm Teresa Kennedy Dupé.
Thomas Leigh.
J.B. Fisher.
Audrey Sherrell.
And J.D. Chandler.
We're starting the second season of Murder by Experts.
Tonight,
the Beehive Murder. On Murder by Experts.
Murder by Experts.
Brought to you by
Peace. It's what everyone wants.
Choose peace.
War is over if you want it.
Portland, December 1881. In the dingy upstairs rooms above that despicable hole, the Beehive Saloon, an aging and ill homeless woman is looking for a dry place to stay. Mary J. Sullivan was in bad shape. She had been in Portland nearly 20 years, and she had done things she wasn't proud of. An old friend, Henry Skinner, gave her his room, but he locked her in. The saloon owner called Police Chief James Lapeus to see if she needed to be quarantined. Some witnesses heard the sounds of a scuffle. When the chief returned to the station, he said the sick old woman would be dead by morning. In the morning, she was found dead, naked on the floor with bruises all over her body. Chief of Police Lapeus, who was the last person who saw the woman alive, said he was perfectly satisfied that she was not foully dealt with. He accounted for the different bruises on her person, on the ground, that in her agony she grew delirious, inflicting them herself. We'll be right back to tell you about it after this message.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Peace. It's what everyone wants. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, June 6th, 1944.
They will be sore tried by night and by day, without rest, until the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war.
I do not bring with me today a definitive solution to the problems of war. The instruments of war do have a role to play in preserving the peace. And yet this truth must coexist with another. That no matter how justified, war promises human tragedy.
We know when women contribute in making and keeping peace, entire societies enjoy better outcomes. We know when women participate in the peace processes, often overlooked issues like human rights, individual justice, national reconciliation, economic renewal are often brought to the forefront.
Just the Trump theory on war. I'm really good at war. I love war in a certain way.
Including with nukes, yes, including with nukes.
I want to be unpredictable. I'm not going to tell you right now what I'm going to do.
I know more about ISIS than the generals do, believe me.
Even in time of war, choose peace.
Now I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go to warm Haiti? Why can't we live in bliss?
History isn't free!
Ladies and gentlemen, everywhere in America, history is under attack.
History has to be as accurate as you can make it, so you need a number of versions of it so that people can understand it in like a, you know, in a holistic way.
History isn't free.
Support your local historian.
Support your local historian.
Support your local historian.
www.patreon.com/JDChandler. It doesn't take very much, and it really makes a difference to us. That's www.patreon.com/JDChandler. This is the Peace and Love Network. Well, welcome back for the second season of Murder by Experts. And tonight, what we want to talk about is the Beehive Murder, which happened in December of 1881. And I'm going to start by reading the Oregonian articles, which are our main source for this, and the little bit of information that we have on these murders at this point. So the first one is from Friday morning, December 9th, 1881. The headline, Shocking Death of an Abandoned Woman in the Beehive Saloon Building. Mm. About 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon, the dead body of Mrs. Mary J. Sullivan was found in a room above the Beehive Saloon, a disreputable hole on Fifth Street between Oak and Pine. The facts of her death, as near as can be learned, are as follows. A man named Shinner, who had been occupying the room in which she was found, states that on Tuesday, Mrs. Sullivan came to him, begged for some assistance, and asked him to try and find her some place to sleep. And not having means to get her a room, he gave her his own. So far as can be ascertained, she never left her room after that night. Wednesday evening, she sent word downstairs that she was sick. Of this, Chief of Police Lepeus was notified. He went to see her at 10 o'clock that night, taking her some water and a cup, and told her he would find her husband and send him to her. Sullivan was found yesterday morning, and upon going to her room with the proprietor of the saloon, found her dead. She was lying on the floor, perfectly nude, in a half-reclining position with her head against the wall. There were some bruises on her person, which in all probability had been inflicted by herself in the agony of her delirium, and although there are different surmises as to the cause of her death, it is generally supposed that being sick, exhausted, and broken down, and not having had sufficient nourishment or proper medical assistance, she died from natural causes. She was about 50 years of age and has lived in this city for the past 15 or 20 years. Coroner Garnold will hold an inquest this morning at 9 o'clock. The only other story that we have about this case is the next day in Oregonia. So this is from the Oregonian, Saturday morning, December 10th, 1881. Headline, Mrs. Sullivan's death, caused by violence, so the coroner's jury says, but Chief Lepaeus thinks otherwise. An inquest was held on the remains of Mrs. Sullivan yesterday morning. Messrs. R.J. Forbes, John Carley, G.W. Riley, William Grooms, M. Brown, and E.F. Herboy being impaneled for the jury. H.M. Skinner was the first witness called. He gave little or no evidence that could be used as a clue to her death, only stating that he was the regular occupant of the room in which she died, and that upon his giving her the room, he locked her in. Her husband, Dan Sullivan, was next examined and did not give any direct testimony connected with her sudden death. Annie Perry testified that on Wednesday night she heard noises in the room Mrs. Sullivan occupied that night, sounding as if some parties were scuffling. Dr. Myers swore to having seen the woman in the pest house. The jury then adjourned until 7 o'clock p.m. when Mrs. Hayden, who lives near the Beehive Saloon, was called. She said that she knew the deceased and had heard screams and the sound of scuffling coming from the saloon. C.F. Brantley, who owns the saloon, gave his evidence, saying that he had seen her twice while alive during the time she was there, once in company with Officer Collins and once with Chief of Police Lepaeus, and that upon both occasions she wanted water, saying she was sick. He also accompanied Sullivan to her room when they found her dead. Dr. W.B. Cardwell gave a written statement saying that to judge from the condition of the remains, she came to her death from the effect of violence and that she had been suffering from a severe case of blood poisoning, but not to such a degree as to cause death. He also said that inasmuch as there was no direct evidence of the cause of her death, he believed he was right in advancing this theory. The jury rendered a verdict of death from injuries inflicted by some person or persons unknown to them. The remains were interred yesterday afternoon. Chief of Police Lepaeus, who was the last person who saw the woman alive, says he is perfectly satisfied that she was not foully dealt with. When he saw her at 10 o'clock Wednesday night, she was very sick and suffering from the effects of long-continued debauch, and upon his return to the police station stated that he would be surprised if she did not die during the night. He accounts for the different bruises on her person on the ground that in her agony she grew delirious, inflicting them herself. Quite a theory.
Quite a theory.
And interesting that the guy who has the theory is the last guy who was seen with her when she was alive, and the guy who's in charge of investigating her murder.
Well, let's talk about this chief.
Yeah.
Lepaeus?
Lepaeus.
How do we spell that?
L-A-P-P-E-U-S.
Okay. And what is his background? Wasn't he...
Wasn't he
in the military?
He was military. Yes, he was. I can tell you his story because Chief Lepaeus is one of my favorite characters from Portland history. He's a bad guy. He's definitely a bad guy. And I do tend to like bad guys. But Chief Lepaeus, he was a young man from New York. In 1847, he joined the army. It was the beginning of the Mexican War. So he volunteered for the Mexican War. And they formed a unit of New York volunteers that was what they were calling at that time a pioneer unit. So the idea was to send them to a thinly populated area, have them do military occupation, and then when their term was up, they would discharge them there. And they were sent to San Francisco. San Francisco had just been captured from Mexico, and it was a brand new American city.
It's interesting now to look back and realize that San Francisco was an occupied city.
It was, yeah.
After we took it away from Mexico.
Yeah.
It's also boggling my mind right now to realize that Mexico was most of California.
Yeah, it was. Kind of changes your thinking about illegal immigrants. They were here first. After about a year, they found gold in Sacramento during that time. Mm-hmm. And so when these guys got out, almost all of them went right to Sacramento. Lepaeus went to a town called New Helvetia.
He opened a store. Now, a store in those days at that time was a very fluid concept, because what he sold mostly was booze, gambling, and probably women. We don't know that he had prostitutes working for him in New Helvetia, but it would have been kind of unusual if he didn't. But some of the men from his unit became involved in a criminal gang known as the Hounds, and they preyed on the people in the Gold Rush area with robbery and extortion and, you know, just what American criminal gangs do, that's what they did. And this was at a time when California didn't really have policing. Law was really loose and really a personal thing in those days. But around 1851, and the Committee of Vigilance started hanging hounds. So it was basically a lynching group. But they did get the hounds under control. We don't know if LaPaius was a member of the hounds or not, but he certainly knew them. And he certainly was doing business that they would have been interested in. And we do know, during this time, when the Committee of Vigilance was working, LaPaius had, because Chambeau was with him too, LaPaius and Chambeau had to defend his store from somebody. And they were involved in a major gunfight, and they killed several of their attackers.
Wow.
Shortly after that, LaPaius moved to Portland. He recently married, and he and his wife picked up stakes. They decided California was too hot, and they moved to Portland. And LaPaius had plenty of money when he got here, and he opened the he built the Orofino Theater, which was on Stark Street. And the Orofino was really fancy. So he built the Orofino Theater to attract people, to put Portland on the map. There's lots of rumors and stories about the Orofino. Most likely, at some times, it was used as what they called a variety theater, which was pretty much a strip club. Now, in the 1850s, they weren't taking all of their clothes off, but they were showing leg. You know, it was considered really risque to even show your legs bare. And I think, but they also had booths upstairs where the entertainers could come and give private shows. Although the Orofino was a lot more than that, because it was also a major theatrical venue. When touring theatrical companies would come through, they'd put on shows at the Orofino. They would hold mass meetings, political mass meetings were held there. He became very big in the Democratic Party during this time. And he got elected as marshal in the 1860s. And then in 1879, when they created the Metropolitan Police Department, LaPaius became the first police chief.
The Orofino probably had prostitutes in it, didn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very likely. Yeah. LaPaius also was known as a blackleg gambler. He was accused of a lot of crimes in his life, multiple. It's pretty clear he took bribes to let people out of jail.
I did a little research on Mary Sullivan.
Oh, tell us.
Mary J. Sullivan, and she was born in 1831, and she came to New York in 1854, which would have been right on the heels of the Great Hunger. She was Irish, and she was from County Cork. And I did some research on the definition of an abandoned woman, and it was basically a woman who was abandoned who might fall under the label of occasional prostitute.
An occasional prostitute was not really that uncommon a thing.
Yeah.
Because so many of the people that came to Portland in those days lost family on the way. So it was not uncommon for women to end up in town with no support and nobody, no loved ones, nothing. Everybody dead. So prostitution sometimes was the only way to survive.
What confuses me is that her husband is named Danny Sullivan.
And I need to find out a little more about who Dan Sullivan is.
Because that doesn't make sense, because Sullivan was her maiden name.
Weird.
Mary J. Sullivan was her maiden name. She was born in 1831. She would have been 50 in 1881 when she was murdered. So how could her husband be Danny Sullivan?
Interesting.
And she came to New York with a man by the name of Collins. And there's an officer, Collins, that was present.
She came to New York with Collins?
She came to New York with a male relative named Collins, yes.
And there is an Officer Collins who's involved in this.
Yeah.
We need to talk about the pest house.
Yes.
What is the pest house, and is there an equivalent for that today, or was that a quarantine?
It was a quarantine.
Quarantine.
And it came about during the Civil War. We had I think it was diphtheria. I'll research that and find it for sure. But I think it was a diphtheria outbreak, and they decided that the city marshal, who was LaPaz at the time, I believe, was responsible for the health of the city. He was the main health officer. So he was responsible for quarantine. It wasn't until, I think, 1864, with a different marshal, that they actually bought a building to do this in. And it was called the Pest House, and I still haven't located it yet, but I think up in the Slaptown area is where it was. We had disease after disease. It killed off the Indians, but it never really went away.
Mm-hmm.
So we still had these infectious diseases. But 1881, it would make sense. The keeper of the saloon knows that there's a sick woman upstairs. You better call the chief, make sure she's okay. Maybe she needs to go to the pest house. This is fun. This is the kind of stuff we can kind of dig our teeth into.
Yeah.
I think the other thing we need to know about is the beehive.
This is
a long Portland tradition of these dive bars with rooms upstairs, and people die. All kinds of scary things happen in these places.
Right.
And it's been going on not only in the 1880s, but it's probably still going on today.
I would love to look into Union Jack's upper portion.
Well, even in more modern times, Erickson's bar, cafe, on 2nd or 3rd Street, I think it's on 2nd.
Yeah. 2nd and Burnside, yeah.
Was selling beer and women.
Yeah.
Also wondering when the beehive was torn down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a bank there now, I think.
I think that is. Isn't that where
the location of the
the U.S. Bank?
Yeah.
That's the big fancy temple.
Yeah. I find it odd too that the guy whose room it is locked her in.
I thought weird too.
Why did you lock her in?
Yeah.
The other thing that
so she couldn't get out.
Yeah. The other thing that is is curious to me is, why was a woman found completely naked on December 9th?
Yes.
In 1881.
Why was she naked?
In an old, in the old days when they didn't really have good heating.
It would have been cold.
If she was naked, that means she was probably sexually assaulted.
It does.
She was definitely beaten to death, obviously. She was beaten to death. She didn't inflict those bruises on her shoulders and her arms and her thighs. There's no way you can do that.
No.
Everything in the articles where the Oregonian says she was run down, she was weakened. People that are run down and weakened, women that are run down and weakened, they aren't prone to having the energy to have a fit in which they throw themselves violently against the wall or what have you and then die from, bruising, etc. She was beaten to death. She was more than likely sexually assaulted. But I think she was probably also beaten to death because if you think about the time, 1881, and her age, she was 50. She was probably unattractive at that point. She was probably underweight. She probably didn't have a tooth in her mouth. So there was no reason for her to be valuable anymore. She was a nuisance. She was a pest. Maybe she knew something about LaPaz that he didn't want people to know. And he was just sick and tired of looking at her.
Something that strikes me now, too, is LaPaz saying she will probably be dead by morning.
Exactly.
And he arranged it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
she
was sick, she's going to be dead, so expect her to be dead.
Exactly. And if he left her beaten and naked on the floor, there's a pretty good chance she's going to be dead by morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would LaPaz's motive have been to kill her? Why would he kill her? It seems crazy. I could think of a couple of things.
Well, there's a couple of things. He was covering up something else, for one thing.
Sure. She'd been in town for a while. She knew about what was going on, probably.
And if he was aware that she was in the pest house, he knew her background.
She came, what, 15 or 20 years before, so we're talking about maybe 1861, 62. He might have been to the marshal when she came to town. Mm-hmm.
And he might have been a John.
He very well could have been.
Might have been a John who...
He could have been a pimp.
Who got infected by her and, to hell with you, bitch.
Could be. He could have been trying to coerce her into going to the pest house.
Yeah.
That's another option. Or
at her.
He might have just been in a really bad mood. And when she defied him by not wanting to go to the pest house, maybe he just lost control.
Yeah.
He was known for a violent temper, and had been in at least two gunfights that I know of, and a big fist fight with the state treasurer in Salem one night.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, you guys. I think we're on to a really interesting case, and I think this is going to be our continuing story for the second season.
On Murder by Experts.
Murder by Experts.
Brought to you by...
Peace! It's what everyone wants!
Ladies and gentlemen, everywhere in America, history is under attack. Many states are attempting to make it illegal to teach history in the public schools that shows our nation in a poor light. If you are Black, Asian, Native American, a woman, poor, Latino, an immigrant, child of an immigrant, gay, working class, or middle class, you already know American history is not pretty. We must never forget that.
History isn't free.
Support your local historian.
Support your local historian.
Support your local historian.
www.patreon.com/JD Chandler. It doesn't take very much, and it really makes a difference to us. That's www.patreon.com/JD Chandler. This is the Peace and Love Network.
It's about family.
I know this smile I'm wearing can't conceal the intensity
and coming home
of all the closeness and resentment.
Pandora's Box.
An explosive musical.
You know what you're gonna find down there. Don't go in the basement. You don't know what you're gonna find down there. And for my peace of mind.
Coming soon.
I did demolition in the army, and I knew a lot of mud. Some of my souvenirs are toxic, some of them might explode.
Next on Murder by Experts!
So you knew Ken Death?
I knew Ken Death.
How'd you know?
I had started working at the Pine Street Theater in February of 1987, and it was a great musical venue, all ages venue. It was known as being the premier punk rock and reggae African music venue in Portland. It was also all ages, and it had a capacity of about 1,200 people.
Now, in 80, you said you started it at the Pine Street in 87?
87, okay. Yes.
At that time, it seems like there was a strong neo-Nazi movement involving the punk music in Portland. Is that true?
That came a little later, probably 88, 89.
Okay.
Out-of-towners, California skinheads started showing up, Nazis.
This was the Tom Metzger's KKK, yes, that were recruiting.
Yes, white Aryan resistance. And there, yes. Ken Death showed up, and he was this punk rock kid with a mohawk, and he had the leather jacket with the spikes. Mm-hmm. You know, he had that attitude, and he wasn't a bad kid.
Yeah.
I think he had been thrown away by his parents, or probably abused, grew up on the streets of Seattle, and that's where Chris Monlux had met him in Seattle. The last time I saw Ken Death, it was in 1989. I believe it was in November of 89. It was a week before the Mulligata Sarah murder.
On Murder by Experts.
Murder by Experts.